Bunker, right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world. Me, Terrible Tommy, in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. I want to thank all you boys and girls for getting your donations in. Almost everybody's in already. That's good. It's a little rainy day out here, but the grass is growing very well. I had two deer in my backyard last night. Beautiful deer. They're not too big, but they're really nice looking. They stood there and looked at me, and I looked at them, and our dogs looked at them, and they looked at our dogs, and then they trotted off. Well, I just had a little catastrophe here. I haven't had this happen in quite some time, but sometimes there's an electronic glitch, and I did almost an entire show, an hour show, and you guessed it, I lost it. And usually I can get it back, but I looked high and low, couldn't find it. It's not there. Something strange happened. There must have been a Jerry the Jew must have got into my electronics division and messed me up. I'm going to be doing the show twice today. first one was real good, too. I don't know whether the second will be that good. If I can just remember what the hell I was talking about. Well, first of all, I guess I better get into this deal about the homosexuals down there in Orlando, Florida, and read what the queer Muslims are saying about the Orlando shooting. Yeah. Would imagine that's a little tough position to be in nowadays. Well, this article says Sunday began with one of the deadliest shootings in American history. Well, he must have missed the Civil War. At least 49 people were killed and more than 50 were injured. Yeah, because the guy knew how to handle that weapon. The attack took place at Pulse, a homosexual nightclub in Orlando, and the suspect was an American Muslim. Well, he was a Muslim who pledged allegiance to ISIS the night of the attack. Yeah. The shooting is an immense tragedy for all Americans. Well, I don't think it's a tragedy for me. I don't think it's going to affect my life in any way. Don't think so. But not all Americans will be equally affected in the days and weeks moving ahead. Well, that's for sure. Queer Muslims, and that's their words, in particular, are caught in the crossfire, mourning the tragedy even as they fear an anti-Muslim backlash in the wake of the attack. That would be called defensive posture. This is according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, man, Moise Deeds. You know, he tells the truth, nothing but the truth. Yeah. Since the attack, many queer Muslims have spoken out about living at the intersection of these two identities. Yeah, how does that work? Because we know what the Quran says about homosexuality, or at least we know how they take care of it over in the Middle East. They chop your head off or something. How it feels to be doubly and triply marginalized in the ways in which Muslim and queer communities interact. Some begin by simply stating, we exist. Shamra Habib, who curates Just Me and Allah, a queer Muslim photo project, wrote about the incident in a piece for the Guardian newspaper over there in England, titled, Queer Muslims Exist, and We're in Mourning Too, unquote. She wants people to know that, quote, being a peace-loving Muslim who is just as angered by homophobic attacks as everyone else isn't out of the ordinary, unquote. Here's more of Habib's piece. Quote, we are now used to the fact that every time a criminally misguided Muslim commits an act of violence, well, I think it's a little more than that if you'll check the world news. The entire religion and all its followers are questioned and placed under suspicion in a way that isn't replicated with other faiths. Well, my faith is in the white race, and believe me, any white person that does anything to help the race violently, boy, I'll tell you, they're all over you like stink on a skunk. It goes around the world over and over and over and over. We in this, of course, includes queer Muslims, have to take extra care walking down the street. Because we might fall and hit our head at night and entering our mosque for fear of Islamic phobic attacks. Muslim organization, well, it could be some Sunnis are going after the other bunch inside the mosque. It could happen. Muslim organizations and activist groups are tasked with the responsibility of releasing public statements, apologizing for the actions of terrorists, or as I call them, guerrilla warfare people, and reminding the world that Islam promotes peace so innocent Muslims who are just trying to go about their daily lives, making a better life for themselves, don't suffer repercussions. Our thoughts must now be with those in Orlando. Well, mine aren't. I'll give them a little bit. My thoughts are with all the white people being butchered around this country by all your wonderful Muslims and black Muslims and China Muslims and even Christians. But over the next few days, as we try to recover from this atrocity, which you won't, and begin to piece together what it all means, it's important to remember that Islam is exploited by religious extremists all over the world. No, it's not exploited by it. It's based on it. Islam was a very warlike religion, and just like Christianity, and Judaism, often in attacks committed against other Muslims. Yeah, all the time. This can't be boiled down to us versus them. Well, why not? We're all experienced the same tragedy together. Oh, well, nobody's guilty. We're all in the same boat, huh? But some suggested that this tragedy will indeed be experienced differently by different groups. In a stream of tweets, one user expressed just how hard it is to be both queer and Muslim right now. Well, this ain't nothing like it would be in the Middle East if you was a queer Muslim. I dare you to put a sign on the front of your T-shirt and walk around over in the Middle East. Life as a queer Muslim is hard right now. The Muslim community throws us under the bus. And the LGBT plus community throws us under the bus too. We can't win. Can't win at all, man. I think I'll go back to being a Baptist. Here's another tweet. Quote, for the former, we are branded as kafirs, non-Muslims, and deviants. And the latter tells us we are not queer enough. The former is rampant with anti-queer, trans rhetoric, and other is rampant with racism and Islamophobia. Just look at Grindr full profile. We're shunned from both sides, and many of us are torn right now. Where do our allegiance lie? Which community do we defend? Wow. I feel so sorry for all these invaders that come over here and expect to be treated real nice, and it just don't work out that way. Here's an interesting one. The National Queer Asian Pacific Islander Alliance also discussed the difficulty of being queer in Muslims and Asians and the fear that can come with it. See what all this diversity brings you? It's confusion. Quote, for those of us who are LGBTQXYZ and Muslim, we wait to see which of our identities we will be more fearful of disclosing in a world that questions our existence and intentions daily. We have found no contradiction in being both queer and Muslims. Well, I don't think you've read the Quran then. And reject the popular narrative that Islam or Islam community as a whole is homophobic and transphobic. Transphobic. We are proud to be both queer and Muslims and cherish both our communities. That's interesting. Looking ahead, Islamic studies professor Amulaula De Sonde says that it's crucial for all Muslim communities to unequivocally support queer Muslims. He better not take a trip back to the Middle East. In the decade he's spent researching Islamic masculinities, De Sonde writes he's heard deafening silence when it comes to Muslim leaders connecting with queer folks in their midst. Queer folks. That sounds like something George Lincoln Rockwell would say. Quote, the challenge for Muslim communities around the world today is to find and appreciate differences and pluralism and to support the lives of believers who do not fit societal norms. It is imperative if we want to support those on the margins who are hurt and damaged. Quote, we need to think carefully about what goes through the mind of that closeted Muslim man listening to statements today, who may well end up married to someone of the opposite sex because he fears losing his position in his Muslim community. In other words, marrying a beard. We need to think carefully about what these statements do to empower heterosexual Muslim individuals who then stand to represent not just Islam, but the ideal gender and sexuality. We all know what that means. But LGBT pride within the Muslim community is also evident. On Twitter, many have circulated pictures of queer Muslims celebrating Pride Month. And the Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity noted this year's convergence of Pride Month and Ramadan as a particular special time of peace, community, and self-reflection. But they cry, peace, peace. But there is no peace. Of course, you realize no nation can last based on this weird, queer, weird, wild, crazy, racially mixed basis. It can't last. It never has. It's like the Tower of Babel. Even though I don't believe anything like that ever happened or could have happened, but it's true as far as a story is concerned. We're going to build a tower up to heaven, talk to God, and get some of those 39 virgins. But when you have millions of non-whites, we already had our queer nation here. It's called the black race. By my standards, they're a little queer. Not physically queer. Well, there are a lot of queer. I run into some of those guys, yeah. Not close, though. They're all over the place. So we got, what, 10, 15, 20 million black persons? And that's not even counting the mulattoes, the gene hijackers. And then we got all this other crap that would come in here. So the country's thoroughly polluted, and I mean that specifically, polluted with a hodgepodge mixture of non-aligned cultural people, non-aligned racial people, non-aligned religious people. You can't have, that's no way to run a railroad. You can't run a railroad like that. It has to collapse. So who's going to benefit by it collapsing? I'm not exactly sure. I think there's some people think they're going to benefit by that collapse, but I don't know. I guess I'm in the position of saying the quicker it collapses, the better. So it won't be so much pain, man. People hate to wait decades and decades or 100 years for it to collapse. It needs to collapse soon, and I think that our opposition's making sure of that. Now the big push is on again about those guns. We got to get those guns from people. We can't have those guns, those assault weapons. Well, anything can be an assault weapon. If you can pick up a refrigerator and hit a guy over the head, that's an assault weapon. So get over it. And of course, every gun and every knife can be an assault weapon. There's idiots that keep yapping about that. Well, I don't know. I heard they arrested a gun down there in Orlando, and they put handcuffs on the gun and took it away to the station because the gun was the trouble. The gun was the enemy. The gun was the criminal, not a man, no. They had him in lockup. They tried to interrogate that gun for a whole weekend. They couldn't get anything out of him because the gun knew better than to talk, you know. I have nothing to say. So they've been waterboarding that gun for several days, but they haven't gotten anything out of him. So anyhow, that's the last I heard about it. I guess they figure if they persecute and question and waterboard enough guns, they'll get the truth. Forget the man that had the gun. He's got a good excuse. They always do. In other words, the old United States of America, North America, has become a goddamn zoo, a total goddamn zoo with the worst insane asylum patients running the show in Washington. You know, if they gave me some time with that criminal gun in the back room, I'd get that gun to talk, man. He'd tell me all about it. Well, let's go up to Sacramento, where we got a Baptist preacher. Pretty dark, very dark, in fact. He's not quite a Negro, but he's definitely a dark, dark mestizo pastor up there. And he had a good, well, I don't know, he had a sermon the other day, Sunday. Well, the Baptists are going to war against the homosexuals. Yeah, well, they always did, right? Listen to this. A Sacramento Baptist preacher's sermon praised the attack of an Orlando nightclub that left 50 people dead, has the local LGBT community outraged, reports CBS Sacramento. Recordings of the sermon by Pastor Roger Jimenez, wonder if he's related to Jose Jimenez, surfaced at the Verity Baptist Church's YouTube account. Quote, "Are you sad that 50 pedophiles were killed today?" Unquote, he said in the sermon. No, I think that's great. I think that helps society. I think Orlando, Florida is a little safer tonight. Unquote. The remarks were delivered on Sunday morning, hours after the attack. quote, we don't need to do anything to help as far as I'm concerned. Orlando is a little bit safer tonight. That's what the mestizo preacher. Now, that's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. Sandria Nelson, the pride director of the Davis-Phoenix Coalition, was left in shock after hearing Jimenez's sermon. He says in all his years growing up Baptist and attending church, no pastor ever spoke of inequality. Well, that's a goddamn lie. You know that. If you're a Southern Baptist, they were definitely supported the Klan, and most of the Klan members and racists in the South were in the Southern Baptist Church. So you never heard anything about inequality. That's ridiculous. Well, he's a big fat Negro, so what are you going to say? Quote, he's not a man of God. He's not a man teaching the true religion, quote, unquote, he said. Well, you see, there you go. What is the true religion? All these guys got the true religion. Well, the guy that shot all those homosexuals, he had the true religion of Islam. Yeah, according to the book.
Sacramento Baptist preacher issued extreme and troubling comments in a videotaped sermon, actually praising the Orlando Club attacks.
Hey, are you sad that 50 pedophiles were killed today? No, I think that's great. I think that helps society. You know, I think Orlando, Florida is a little safer tonight.
His inflammatory video was uploaded to YouTube under the Verity Baptist Church account.
CBS 13's Angela Mushalem is live in Davis tonight, where she spoke with an LGBT group about the controversial speech. Angela.
Sam, Adrian, we want to warn those of you watching tonight again about the nature of these comments made by Pastor Roger Jimenez. And a local LGBT coalition here in Davis says these comments work against everything they've been trying to get in terms of equality.
We don't need to do anything. As far as I'm concerned, Orlando's just a little safer tonight.
YouTube video of Sacramento Pastor Roger Jimenez speaking about the tragedy that struck Orlando, Florida Sunday morning.
As Christians, should we not be mourning the death of these 50 vile, perverted predators?
Wow.
Sandra Nelson, not sure how to react to what Jimenez said. Nelson is pride director of the Davis-Phoenix Coalition, who also grew up Baptist. He says in all his years of attending church, no pastor ever spoke of inequality.
He's not a man of God. He's not a man teaching a true religion.
I wish the government would round them all up, put them up against a firing wall, put a firing squad in front of them, and blow their brains out.
And it's hateful, violent statements like these that Nelson says keeps many in the LGBT community shut out.
It can definitely cause more harm to our LGBT youth and those still living in the closet that are older. It causes our suicide rates to go up. It causes kids to feel like they're worthless.
Hello?
Hey, Roger.
Yes?
We tried to speak with Jimenez Monday morning about the inflammatory comments he made in his speech. This was his response.
I'm not able to talk right now. I'm actually in the middle of a few things.
With the LGBT community recently celebrating marriage equality, Nelson says they've become complacent, but the fight for equality still isn't over.
The bottom line is to love thy brother as you love thyself.
And again, this is a local Sacramento preacher making these hateful statements. He had nothing further to add in front of our cameras today.
Okay, Angela.
Now, I knew we had the black KKK up in Chicago and other cities around the country, but I think now, what do we got? The mestizo KKK, too? Well, the field's getting a little crowded, boy, I'll tell you. There's not too much of that white KKK left, but boy, I'll tell you, the mestizo KKK is coming on strong, and of course, the black KKK is moving ahead briskly, too, so... It's going to be interesting to see how that all turns out. You remember Oral Roberts? He was a big-time preacher back in the 70s. Big time. He's the one who said he swore that he saw a 700-foot Jesus standing next to his house or something. Well, anyhow, they say his Oral Roberts' son was a homosexual. And his truth must be known. Okay. You know, it's amazing how many children of preachers turn out to be homosexual. A hell of a lot of them. And a lot of them become serial killers, too. And pedophiles. Of course, not to be outdone, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association immediately sent trained chaplains with the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team to Orlando to offer emotional and spiritual care to victims of the attack early Sunday at Pulse. The Washington National Cathedral tolled its mourning bell 50 times Monday morning for the lives lost. Well, I cracked that up for hypocrites because Billy Graham used to rail about homosexuals. I remember Billy Graham doing that stuff. Christianity changes with the times very quickly. Well, for all you people who believe in Islamic peace and that it's a peaceful religion, a group of Pakistani clerics have issued a fatwa or religious ruling declaring honor killing over perceived damage to a family's reputation against the teaching of Islam and anyone who carries out such an attack a heretic. Hundreds of Pakistanis, the vast majority women and girls, are murdered every year by relatives after being accused of damaging a family's honor. Most cases involve young women trying to choose partners against the family's wishes. You know, they kill them. If they want a different boyfriend, they kill them. Now that has to come out of the Quran someplace. The ruling by the Sunni Ittihad Council, which includes more than 100 prominent clerics, comes after a string of particularly shocking killings, including the burning to death of a mother of a 16-year-old girl who eloped with a young man. Wow. It seems we're moving towards an age of barbarism, the council said in its fatwa issued on Sunday, a rare edict on the problem in the Muslim-majority country of 190 million people. Burning women alive for marrying by their choice is against the teaching of Islam. Well, is it? How did they get that idea in their head? The council is affiliated with the Bareilly sect of Sunni Islam, the largest sect in Pakistan, and it holds significant influence in Punjab province, where half the Pakistanis live. Considering any killing in the name of honor to be justified is heresy, the council said. Well, I don't know. They do it all the time. They must get it from someplace. Where are they getting that stuff? Now, before you Christians get too self-righteous, here's a report comes in from Sunday. Said relatives of a couple who tied the knot in Sada Paphos on Saturday, I don't know where that's at, it's the Greek islands, I guess, would be lodging a complaint with the Paphos bishopric, after officiating priest allegedly punched the groom's brother in the face during the wedding ceremony. According to the two articles, during part of the ceremony, one of the best men was pushed in a friendly way by the groom's brother during the Isaiah dance, in which the altar is circled three times as part of the ceremony. The report said the priest became frustrated and enraged, putting down his prayer book and hit the brother in the face, drawing blood. The father of the groom then went to the priest but was restrained, though the wedding almost came to a halt. When everyone calmed down, however, the ceremony was completed and the priest allegedly disappeared immediately afterwards. Well, there you go. There's a good Christian boy, I'll tell you. That priest, he loves the baby Jesus. Well, here's one of your funny sick jokes for you. A Muslim walks into a gay bar, a homosexual bar, and the bartender asks, "What'll it be?" And the Muslim says, "Shots for everyone."
Actions, or more specifically inaction, after investigating him more than once and finding no imminent threat. 9 Wants to Know investigator Whitney Wiles spoke with a former FBI agent and federal prosecutor about what can be done and where we're falling short.
The Orlando shooter may be the latest example of someone under watch committing an atrocity. In 2009, the Fort Hood shooter killed 13 people after discussing radical ideas online. Authorities knew about those posts. In 2013, we learned the CIA pushed to get one of the Boston Marathon bombers on a terrorist watch list before that attack.
Threats require a standard of reasonableness. You can't just say anything about anybody and expect that that'll be a crime.
Former U.S. Attorney Troy Ives says we're failing to find potential lone wolves.
We just aren't very good yet at figuring out who these dangerous people are.
Ives suggests deeper background checks, including social media posts, as one way to stop violent people.
Is it enough to look at just past convictions? Apparently not, because look how many people have gotten through the net on that.
Former FBI agent Kevin Kinnearum calls this a debate with no clear answer.
There's a lot of political pressure, I think, that goes down onto these agencies of why didn't you catch it before. As time gets away from those things when they didn't catch it, then the civil liberties start to swing back.
Monday, FBI Director James Comey defended how the agency handled its knowledge of the Orlando shooter before he started shooting.
We're also going to look hard at our own work to see whether there is something we should have done differently. So far, the honest answer is, I don't think so.
In Denver, Whitney Wild, 9 News.
A bill that would have stopped anyone ever on the terrorist watch list from buying a gun died in the U.S. Senate last year. Opponents said the bill could hurt people who are on the terrorist watch list who shouldn't be. On 90s.com, we do have continuing coverage, including resources if you or someone you know is struggling with the Orlando shooting. We also have a list of vigils happening around.
Let's talk about dogs for a change. I've got a Siberian Husky. And I've had German Shepherd coyote mixes and terriers and like that. But the pit bull has been very interesting to me. When I was in the Klan, a lot of the skinheads and people like that had pit bulls. And I think because of their scary reputation. But it looks like their reputation might be a little skewed because this fellow thinks differently. I've always loved dogs that look like pit bulls. Wide and smiling faces, goofy expressions, broad chests, dirty bodies, short coats, enthusiastic tails. I grew up not knowing about dog fighting or about this breed's vicious reputation. My terror was reserved for German Shepherds. My equally frightened little brother tumultuously called them Sheffers, with their pointed, mean faces and loud barks. There were some territorial ones in the yards in my Providence, Rhode Island home neighborhood. But after moving to New York, I came to understand that pit bulls are hated. My little East Village copy shop where we got Josie's invitations has a big, short-coated, wide-chested, flat-faced dog behind the counter. His name is Curtis. He comes when you call and accepts head pats with dignity. But when I asked the owner, Santo, what kind of dog Curtis was, he hesitated. Quote, "He's a mix," Santo said. "Terrier. Other things. Pit bull," unquote. He clearly was reluctant to say those two words. He thought I'd recoil. You know what people say about pit bulls. Violence is in their genes. They have double rows of teeth. Their jaws can unhinge like a snake. Their jaws lock after they bite. They don't feel pain the way other dogs do. In 1987, the U.S. News and World Report called them the most dangerous dog in America, able to chomp through chain-link fences. The Guardian called pit bulls dogs of war who can bite through concrete. Time called them time bombs on legs and started a story on them with a quote from the Hound of the Baskervilles. Fire burst through its open mouth. Its eyes glowed with smoldering glare. Its muzzle and hackles and dewlap were outlined in flickering flame. Never in the delirious dream of a disordered brain could anything more savage, more appalling, more hellish be conceived than that dark form and savage face, unquote. A friend had her family dog genetically tested, and when she discovered it had some pit bull lineage, she gave it away. Her kids sobbed. But what if the dog had lost it one day? That's what pit bulls do, right? None of this, of course, is true. Bronwyn Dickey's fascinating new book, Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon, charts the evolution of the pit bull stereotyping. It begins with a quote from Andre Gide, quote, "There are very few monsters who warrant the fear we have of them," unquote. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, pit bulls were considered the family's friendliest dogs. Dogs that looked like them served in the Battle of Gettysburg and in Normandy. One accompanied Laura Ingalls Wilder's family in her covered wagon journey across the prairie. Helen Keller owned and adored one. Another name accompanied suffragette Virginia Watrous on the campaign trail in 1915. Still another starred in his Master's Voice campaign for RCA, and another in Our Gang Kitty comedies. Hold it. Dickey observes that pit bulls were then seen as quintessentially American, good-natured, brave, resilient, and dependable, unquote. But within a few decades, they became DNA-driven vicious beasts, biologically hard word to kill. You know what these stereotypes and assumptions, the notion that genetic heritage will out, reminds me of? The idea that we have horns, notions that we are genetically driven to be shifty, money-grubbing, and purvey, they're as grounded in truth as the stereotypes about the pit bulls, so-called Jews of the canine world. Anyhow, I've met a lot of pit bulls, and every one I met was a damn good dog. Of course, not as good as my dog. Now let's talk about Mr. Trump. Here's an experiment. Tell a large group of people who depend on you for authoritative information and societal analysis that someone is fascism incarnate for months on end. Cast this person as a singular threat to democracy who, if he hasn't already, will do everything in his power to subvert the very freedoms that their lives are based upon. After whipping the group into a frenzy such that they react to a physical presence of this person as an occasional occasion to riot, condemn them for acting on what you've told them. Such is the case right now at Vox, which recently suspended editor Emmett Renzin for his tweets that encourage people to riot at Trump rallies. The offending tweets were, of course, sent out on a night when an actual riot took place, when supporters at a Trump rally in San Jose were beaten, bloodied, pelted with eggs, and generally harassed by a crowd of close to 400 protesters. Renzin was castigated for inciting violence and suspended from Vox. In a statement, editor-in-chief Ezra Klein said that while Vox doesn't take institutional positions on most questions, Renzin had crossed the boundary by directly encouraging dangerous illegal activity and would be suspended as such. This, of course, is Ezra Klein, who in a video posted back in February called Donald Trump dangerous, extreme, and terrifying. The same Ezra Klein whose website published articles like this, this, and this. That last one coming just yesterday. But it's not just Vox. Every publication from the New York Times to Atlantic and every public intellectual worth their salt has either outright compared Trump to Hitler or painted him as a harbinger of the end times. Even Andrew Sullivan called him an extinction-level threat. He followed up that up with a lot more of the same, but it basically boils down to this. If liberal publications and intelligentsia believe what they say, i.e. that Trump is a fascist demagogue who will unequivocally destroy democracy and America's reputation in the world, then how can they turn around and condemn their readers for acting on the information presented to them when they riot? Renzin, for his part, clarified that he believed that violence against the actual rally-goers was morally reprehensible and should be denounced, but that property destruction was perfectly acceptable for people who believed that they were opposing the rise of a would-be tyrant. This was a sort of a hair split that came pretty late in his stream of tweets about the incident, and his original tweet, quote, "If Trump comes to your town, start a riot," unquote, is hardly that clear or reasonable defensible. But this point, even if it got lost in the shuffle, speaks to something larger. He calls the whole phenomenon concern trolling, an act in which the media stokes a concern for months on end only to condemn those who act on those concerns. He compared the recent round of tut-tutting to those who believed, on one hand, that deeply ingrained white supremacy and structural racism in Ferguson, Missouri, had resulted in the death of Michael Brown, while on the other hand criticized the protesters for operating outside of democratic boundaries by rioting. Slovenian philosopher Slavo Zizek wrote about this in Welcome to the Desert of the Real. Quote, "When today's left bombards the capitalist system with demands it obviously cannot fulfill, it is basically playing a game of hysterical provocation. The problem with this strategy, however, is not only that the system cannot meet these demands, but that in addition, those who voice them do not really want them to be realized." Meaning it's awfully easy for liberal elites to levy radical charges like Trump will end America, knowing that they'll never have to act on those charges. In this way, Zizek writes, they can hypocritically retain their clear radical conscience while continuing to play their privileged position, unquote. Think back in March, Trump's rallies had seen an uptick in violence, culminating in a grainy video of a protester receiving a devastating punch in the head from a rallygoer, who was then defended by Trump. Left-leaning publications were aflame. The New Republic declared it a symptom of the rise of Trumpism. The rhetoric of Trump and his supporters, it was declared, was violent in a very real, tangible way. Then a few weeks later, when the students at Emory declared outrage at a Trump message scrawled in chalk on their campus, the very same publications put out a piece essentially telling the students to buck up and deal with it, as Osita Narara put it. My intent isn't to condone Renson's call for rioting, the violence of the protesters, or any racist, xenophobic, misogynistic proposal that Donald Trump has made. Those are all irrefutable, immoral actions that should rightly be condemned. What needs to change, however, is the alarm blaring of influential publications whose readers shouldn't be blamed for simply taking the analysis presented to them to its logical conclusion. If journalists don't believe Trump is a Hitler, a fascist, and the end of democracy, and needs to be dealt with as such, then they should stop saying so. Yes, Trump is a unique and recent history for his flouting of political propriety, for his proposals that have been severely misguided, if not outright reprehensible, but to treat him as the first American to whip up nationalistic fervor ignores much of our history. Yeah. Remember, this is coming from the left. This is why Breitbart and R. the Donald have been able to attract devoted followers in droves. The more the left howls about Trump as Lucifer, the more he becomes an irresistible, golden-haired God Emperor that attracts people reasonably disillusioned with coverage of him as easily as he does white supremacists. Milo Yiannopoulos and his ilk can only happen as a reaction to another extreme. Look at this Huffington Post article. It offers direct support for violence against people of a certain political persuasion from a publication that puts all coverage of Trump's campaign under entertainment for almost 6 months last year. Locke wrote about the right and the duty of civil society to overthrow a government that acted against the common interest. While it's doubtful that protesters throwing haymakers at Trump's supporters for expressing their political beliefs had just put down their copies of two treatises of government. They shouldn't be cast as the only culprits here. The hand that feeds pointed and said, sick. I would say that's pretty honest coming from that particular political position, because that's what's happening. I mean, you know, they go absolutely frothing mad and crazy about Trump. He's the worst thing that ever happened. Well, there's been many people run for office in this country that have had the same reaction. And then these people say it's horrible, he's going to destroy the whole place and everything. And then when they go out and riot and hurt somebody, well, then, we didn't mean that. We didn't mean that. Like the writer says, if you truly believe that, then wouldn't you be responsible for going out and doing something about it, maybe even violent? Well, of course. So who causes the violence? You know who causes the violence. That's what it used to be when I used to be invited to lecture at universities, which I did to a few universities on journalism and so forth like that. And I enjoyed it, and the students enjoyed it too. But then all of a sudden, the left at that time, and these are red left, would complain to the media, and the media would carry their threats that if Tom Metzger appears on the campus, there's going to be violence and people can be hurt. And then all of a sudden, the chief of security of the university would go to the president of the college and say, look, we believe in free speech, all right, but they say that if Tom Metzger appears all by himself, there's going to be massive violence on the campus. So that is a threat to public safety. So, Mr. President of the campus, you got to shut Tom Metzger down and keep him off the campus. Well, that worked very well, because after that, I never got invited to lecture anyplace. Well, except Japan. Japan don't give a shit what they say over here. That's the coolest way to shut down free speech and the most sinister that's ever been used, because they knew that Tom Metzger couldn't possibly do something that was going to emanate from himself as far as violence. Am I going to attack the students or, you know, all by myself? No, this is the favorite tactic of the left, to shut off free speech. And then, they claim all the time of the free speech. And the minute anybody interferes with their free speech, they go crazy. And, of course, the left say, well, we weren't really interfering with Tom Metzger's free speech. We just didn't want to see anybody hurt. It might have been interesting over the years if our side might have written articles and called the press and said, well, we're afraid that if this Jew or this black guy or somebody like that is going to speak on the campus, then there's going to be violence. There's going to be maybe people hurt and things like that. Maybe it would have worked the other way, but we never did that because I think our side was more honorable, and sometimes being more honorable doesn't get you any place. Here's a little bit that you might find interesting about Obama and this recent attack and killing of all these people. The reactions to the Orlando massacre shows everything that is wrong with our campaign against the jihad. President Barack Obama, in his first remarks, conveyed anguish, but not anger. He identified the terrorist motivation as hatred, and in order to underline his point, he repeated the word hate a couple of times, but he did not choose to define the particular hate at hand. This is the Islamic ideology that wishes to exterminate large portions of the human race for theological reasons. The homosexuals, as in this case, the Jews, the Muslim miscreants and the hypocrites, the Muslim heretics, Shia and others, who, of course, have suffered the most horribly from terrorist attacks and so forth. Obama has never discussed this ideology. He's opposed to discussing it. Sometimes he mentions extremism, but he never bothered to define extremism either. Donald Trump, in his response on Sunday, demonstrated why he is such a formidable political figure. He exploded in anger at Obama, and the display of emotion was striking for how rare it is among America's political leaders. He called on Obama to resign because of his failure to say the words radical Islam, which was preposterous. But Trump managed to at least to look like a man who was pounding the table. His point about failing to see the words might almost seem to be persuasive if only Trump himself knew how to say these words with a reasonable degree of intelligent nuance. But he does not. He ends up railing at the entire Muslim world, which means at our best allies. Well, that's bullshit. In Afghanistan since well before September. Those are all bought and paid for. That's one thing I don't like about an article like this. Now he's gone off the rails attacking Trump. And I don't mind if you want to attack Trump, but Trump's way of discussing radical Islam amounts to agreeing with the Islamists themselves. The Islamists think the world has never left the Middle Ages and we are forever reliving the War of the Crusades versus Jihad, which I think we may be. Trump thinks likewise. His definition of the enemy adds up to nearly a quarter of the human race, which is the Muslim population. It ought to be obvious that the Islamism's principal victims have always been Muslims. Well, principal victims of blacks in the black community are blacks, too. And Islamism's principal opponents have likewise been Muslims, but nothing is obvious to Trump. Well, in the black community, their worst enemy is blacks, but they also consider us even worse enemies, and we haven't really done it. I haven't done anything to anybody in the black community. Hillary Clinton's first instinct on Sunday was as bland as Obama. She, too, spoke of hatred and otherwise declined to define the enemy. She offered a set of policies. She wants to double down. She favors working with allies and partners and using glib comments, countering their attempts to recruit people here and everywhere, and hardening our defenses at home. Well, I haven't seen her do that. All of this reminds us, at least, that she does know how to lay out policy. I don't believe that. On Monday, in response to Trump's taunts and prompted by Joe Scarborough, she uttered the phrase, not for the first time, radical Islamism, which is a more accurate term than radical Islam. What the hell is the difference? And this was good, but there is a reason why. When Hillary lays out her policy principles, the doctrinal issues do not come up, or do so only afterthoughts. She has a diplomat's bias, which is to avoid the ideological confrontation. In other words, she's a goddamn liar. Do you think people like Hillary Clinton really give a shit that 50 people were killed in that homosexual dance hall? You do? I don't. People in lots of power are great at saying, well, we're praying for them and all that kind of stuff, but underneath, it's all politics and power and money, and they don't give a shit. But the average person is so uninformed or doesn't understand might is right or whatever that they believe that stuff when they say it. Oh, we care about those poor people. They don't give a shit about those poor people. Or if they do, it's just momentary. It's a few days long, and then it's gone. Most people then say, well, no, nobody could be that evil. Are you kidding? They can be twice as evil as you can imagine. As far as evil goes, they talk about Adolf Hitler. He's only average. He's just average as evil. He is nowhere close to the most evil guy that's ever been around. All world leaders are, I would call them evil, if you dig down beneath the surface of their sick brains. Well, that's about it for today, boys and girls. I don't know, I think I'm getting shell-shocked here that I've done this show twice, and I had some good stuff in the first run at it, and I couldn't even remember for the second. So anyhow, if I sound a little off wonk, I got a good reason. I'll see you tomorrow, Wednesday, Wotan's Day. I got a German film crew coming in here tomorrow. I don't know what the hell they want, but I'm going to tell them what for.
Here, Your Majesty, we have an infant phenomenon, a remarkable child of 10. He's quite a historian, editor of our school magazine.
Ah, very interesting.
This, Your Majesty, is Rupert, our young editor.
How do you do, Rupert?
How do you do?
Sit down. And what's that you're reading?
Karl Marx.
Surely you're not a communist.
Do I have to be a communist to read Karl Marx?
Rupert.
That's a valid answer. Well, if you're not a communist, what are you?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I dislike all forms of government.
But somebody must rule.
And I don't like the word rule.
Well, if we don't like the word rule, let's call it leadership.
Leadership in government is political power, and political power is an official form of antagonizing the people.
What magazine did you say he edits? A commentary on current events. Pardon me. My dear young man, politics are
necessary.
Politics are rules imposed upon the people.
In this country, rules are not imposed. They are the wish of all free citizens.
Travel around a bit, then you'll see how free they are.
Yes, but you didn't let me finish.
They have every man in a straitjacket, and without a passport, he can't move a toe.
But if you'll allow me to...
In a free world, they violate the natural rights of every citizen.
But you don't let me fully...
They have become the weapons of political despots.
Yes, but may
I... And if you don't think as they think, you're deprived of your passport.
Will you allow me to...
To leave a country is like breaking out of jail.
Yes, but...
And to enter a country is like going through the eye of a needle.
But
will... Am I free to travel?
Of course you're free to travel.
Only with a passport.
Will you allow me to say
something? Only with a passport. Do animals need passports?
Have you finished?
It's in Congress that in this atomic age of speed, we are shut in and shut off by passport.
If you'll shut up and let somebody else talk...
And free speech, does that exist?
No, you've got it all.
And free enterprise.
We were talking of passports.
Today it's all monopoly.
All right. Now, will you...
Can I go into the automobile business and compete with the other trucks?
If I can get in a word...
Not a chance. Can I go into the grocery business and compete with the chain stores?
Will you shut up?
Not a chance. Monopoly is the menace of free enterprise. As I look back 60 years ago...
Where were you 60 years ago?
He was a glint in his great-grandfather's eye.
Very well now. Have you finished? Now let me say something. Let me tell you how wrong you are, in the first place. In the first place, now I've forgotten what I wanted to say.
And the atomic bomb.
Ah.
It's a crime that when the world cries for atomic energy, you want to make atomic bombs.
Me? I'm against atomic bombs.
You want to wipe out civilization, destroy all life on this planet. You don't think you're living in the night.
I lost my throne because I didn't want atomic bombs.
You and your kind think that atomic bombs can solve your problem.
Listen, you little rat.
Today, man has too much power. The Roman Empire collapsed with the assassination of Caesar. And why?
If you...
Because of too much power. Feudalism blew up with the French Revolution. And why?
All right.
Because of too much power. And today, the whole world will blow up. And why?
Because of too much power.
The monopoly of power is a menace to freedom. It degrades and victimizes every individual. And where is the individual?
I don't know.
Lost in terror because he's made to hate instead of love. If civilization is to survive, we must combat power until the dignity and peace of man are restored.
What's the meaning of this?
Well, that's from a movie entitled The Anarchist Kid, in which Charlie Chaplin was in that movie. He's the one talking to the kid. Of course, Charlie Chaplin was a leftist, some would say even a Marxist, but I certainly agree with much of what he said.